Hey everybody, welcome to a very special episode of the Faith Church Podcast. Episode number 100.
100.
And if you don't recognize that voice, that is my co-host for the day, Jeff Clossy. And I am Jay Williams. And this is episode number 100.
I can't believe that we are on number 100. Honestly, I can't believe that.
It is. There's got to be one of those, not parables, but fables about slow and steady, you know, or just about a little bit at a time, or the
doing it once a week, yeah. And then it adds up.
Something like that.
Yeah.
Isn't one of Aesop's fables about a podcast?
I think you're right.
There's a bird doing a podcast with a worm. And then at the 100th episode, the bird eats the worm.
Early in the morning.
Yeah,
that sounds about
right.
Nailed it.
So on the 100th episode, it's fitting that you would be co-hosting with me because you've done like 8 of these. So this is fitting that Robbie would bail on the 100th episode. But that's okay.
How many have I done?
I don't know.
Did you count?
No. Are you kidding me? I just knew it was the 100th episode because Christoph told me that it was the 100th episode.
Yeah, I almost didn't believe that when I heard it.
It's
pretty neat.
So early on, I used to count each episode. I'd be like, hey, episode 24 and episode 27. And then we started losing count right in the upper 20s somewhere. And I would fumble around for it. And Robbie would be like, it's not a big deal. Nobody cares. And I'd be like, what? But it's neat to know. And then we just lost count. And then all of a sudden, Christoph sent us a message saying, hey, next episode is 100. Like, 100 episodes. I mean, I feel like if nothing else, the 8 people who listen to this should feel very loved. That's what I feel like. I feel like that people should know. Actually, I don't know what our stats are. It's higher than 8, but
9 or 10.
Yeah, it depends on the week.
But this is something that we've really grown to enjoy, haven't we?
Oh yeah, it's always one of those things. I mean, look, full disclosure. I never, like, leading up to it, like, even today, as we're sitting in your office and just kind of talking through, like, hey, how should we handle the podcast today? I was thinking, my motivation is so low. But then once I get rolling and can picture, hopefully, people who are listening to it and trying to help them, then I get on a roll.
Yeah, I have really enjoyed it. I mean, the times where I get to do that usually are when after I'm preaching. Or if someone's out of the office, I'll step in. And I love getting to just talk through the way that it gives people a window, I think, into the way we would talk here after a Sunday when we're thinking through how the sermon hit or how we want to help people that week with it. And I just think that's a joy to get to share it with other people. And hopefully it's been helpful.
Yeah, hopefully. I mean, it seems to have been. We get a lot of feedback about it, so evidently it is helpful. So speaking of how we feel about the sermon, I did also mention to you that this was, I was not excited about how this past week went, but it was one of those times where I think people's first reaction, if I act lukewarm about a sermon, their first reaction is they want to tell me how great it was, which shockingly doesn't help because I just think, well, I mean, one of two things enters my mind. Either A, oh, you're just trying to be nice, or B, it was meaningful to you because of the Holy Spirit, and then, like, praise God. So it's like the highest of highs and the lowest of lows. But either way, over years of preaching a lot of sermons, people should know that I'm not as fragile about how it goes as I was when I was younger. I just know that God will use it however. But it was one of those that as I'm getting close to the end, I'm like, would you just land this plane? Like, just put everybody out of their misery, land this plane. It's snowing outside. We had a blizzard.
It was an exciting Sunday.
It was an exciting Sunday. I was actually surprised at the turnout.
I was too.
I was surprised that so many people, we have grizzled winter veterans up here. And so they were not turned off by a little bit of snow.
Why don't you give me something hard to do?
Right. I had actually when somebody said, I'm not going to name who it was, but they said that they actually preferred that the plows hadn't been out yet because the snow kind of like held them on the road.
Oh my. I can say I have not felt that.
Oh man, that's like such a such a Wisconsin, a Northeast Wisconsin mindset of like, yep, the snow gives me a little bit of traction. I just prefer that.
Yeah, we've really plunged into it now.
Into
winter.
Winter.
All this snow, and then you're today about
it's a podcast. And I was like, no, we've decidedly not
plunged today. It's this like exciting. I thought -2 was the last I saw on my way in. That's really cold.
I just don't feel a difference. Once it gets down below like 15, I don't notice.
Yeah, I mean, it's cold either way.
It's just cold. It's just cold. So, but what's not cold is this podcast.
Because it's 100.
Because it's episode 100. And we and it was momentum. The message on money.
Yes.
It's kind of fitting that the 100th episode would be on money. I was trying to say what was not cold was like the preaching, but I had just said I wasn't so thrilled with the sermon. And so you could have said that. That would have been super helpful, Jeff.
Let's take that again.
3, 2, 1. You know, it wasn't cold.
The preaching.
Now
do you feel different?
Yeah, so nice of you to say. So it was on fire this week is what you're saying. That's great.
Yeah.
So yeah, we preached on money, which is every pastor's favorite topic. Well, actually, I shouldn't say that. There are definitely pastors who enjoy talking about that. But here's the thing. I feel like we should enjoy talking about it because it's one of the things that, I mean, obviously, as we mentioned, Jesus talks about it a lot. And it's always attached to incredible rewards and just great things. Like it's opportunities abound everywhere for generosity and for faith and I mean, it's always positive.
Yes.
I mean, I shouldn't say it's always positive. Obviously, there are all those warnings about being rich. But with God's attitude towards money and the believers, the disciples' opportunity with money is positive.
Well, it's one of those things that most of us don't wake up in the morning, on most mornings, and think, man, I really wish someone would ask me to make a stewardship decision today with my money. That is not where most of us start. Right?
It's not.
But that kind of conversation and thought done in faith and in love is so good for us. And I think that's what you're getting at with like, it isn't necessarily the most exciting thing to address, but it's clearly crucial. It can lead to so much life and flourishing. And Jesus taught about it a lot, like you said, a lot.
Which is so interesting. I mean, I feel like if we... Obviously, a big reason why pastors are uncomfortable, at least why I can say that I have been uncomfortable in the past talking about it, is because I'm afraid, I've been fearful that people would get the wrong impression. That's a huge criticism of the church when people say why they left the church, like all they cared about was money and that's all they talked about. And so that can drive you into, and it drove me into the other ditch of saying, well, then I'm just gonna kind of avoid that. Let that be in private discipling conversations. But you know, when you preach on that, you kind of alienate things. But when you do that, you're ignoring, you know, a huge chunk of scripture, and that's obviously not faithful to preaching. But then when I would do it, I would often be apologetic. And so the last few times, like as I've gotten older in my ministry, I just kind of go at it the other way, just like completely unapologetically and just going right at, you know, what I think Jesus is getting at, because I think that's what's most helpful. That's what can be obstacles for pastors in talking about it. But Jeff, why are there obstacles? Like, what do you think the obstacles are from, you know, Jesus promises these incredible rewards. We are asked to give generously, to view money in a particular way, to not worry about it. All these incredible things that are said about how the Christian is supposed to view money. Why do we not view it? Like, what are obstacles that we are dealing with that keep us from experiencing what God has for us when it comes to money?
That's a good question. I think a big one is just ignorance. So you said, you know, there's these promises, there's life, you know, these rewards, treasures in heaven. And I think some of it is related to not understanding that, but then some of it is not realizing why it's such a problem, or if it is a problem. So for most of us, if we asked ourselves the question, this could be a good exercise for everyone listening. Is money, is generosity and material possessions an area of your life that needs attention, that needs focus? And I think for a lot of us, the assumption is no, it doesn't. I've got it under control. And to me, that is a major obstacle, because scripturally and with sin, it is a problem for most of us, just like anything else, that we need to grow into Christ's image more and more. Tim Keller, Pastor Tim Keller, gave an example of that when he was preaching a series of messages on the seven deadly sins. When he came to the one on greed, he said that it was like the least attended. Hardly anyone came to that one. And his first reaction was, well, people don't want to hear about money. It makes them feel guilty, or it makes me seem self-serving as a pastor or whatever. But then as he reflected on it more, he realized actually it was because people didn't think that sin was a problem. Mm-hmm. Lust was. Everyone's right. Like, well, yeah, lust, I got to pay attention to that. But greed just wasn't. And unfortunately, that is an indicator of what an idol it is, when we're so blind to it in our life, that we don't realize how we're controlled by it, or that we figuratively bow to it in some way. So ignorance is one.
I think ignorance is a huge one. I think that if we went around and were even being really honest in a group of people where you felt really safe, and you asked what are your biggest sin struggles right now, I don't know that greed or anything to do with money would come up. And so I think we don't realize that it is an issue. We show that in the fact that, you know, we are, you know, all of us, anyone listening, if you are listening to this at all, then you are clearly one of the wealthiest people in the world, like in the top whatever percent of the wealthiest people in the world. And we hear things like that. And on one hand, I understand there's sometimes defensiveness with that, because things are relative, right? It costs more to survive in the United States than it does in other parts of the world. And so that's a really fair point, that there's relative wealth, and then there's just, like, you know, straightforward numbers. And but all of it centers around this idea that we just are kind of oblivious. We're oblivious to it. But I think it also shows that it's one of those areas of our life that we like to believe that we've kind of reached an agreement with our sin. We've kind of just we've tamed it in a certain way that we don't really want that to be poked and prodded at, because we've kind of reached this ceasefire that, like, okay, I'm gonna give, and I'm gonna do this, but then I'm gonna use this however. But it's, our money is not it's not an instrument of faith anymore. It's just this thing. And so we just kind of managed it, you know? And so then we get so comfortable with that then leads us into thinking, like, well, it's not a problem. I've reached an agreement with that sin. And I think, you know, like when you mentioned lust, like nobody would say that about lust. Like nobody, at least nobody who's trying to be faithful to Jesus, would say, like, oh no, I've managed my lust.
Yep. This is just how it's going to be now. I mean, yep. People might function in that way, but we wouldn't want to say that out loud.
Yeah, they would know. We would
feel like, oh, that's not right.
Right. They would know immediately. So I think that is definitely one of them. I think another one is fear. I think we're just afraid. Like we talked about the abundance mentality versus scarcity mentality. And there's just, at least when I think about my own life and obstacles from me being as generous as I believe God would be calling me to be in any given season of life, fear plays into that, where, like, well, what if I don't have enough? Or the part of fear and the scarcity mentality where that has come out in my life has been, what if I give to the wrong thing?
Huh. Interesting.
Like, so if I have $100 that I want to give, then in my mind, scarcity mentality comes in when I say, well, if I give it to this thing over here, I won't have it to give it if there's something better that comes along. Well, that's a scarcity mentality. That's the idea that, okay, well, I can only give it one place. Now, you could say mathematically, well, that's true. You can only give that $100 one place. I can't pull it back from that and then give it somewhere else. But then you're not understanding the abundance of our Father, who, if I gave $100 over here, like, why would he not then give me another $100 to give somewhere else? Like, that would be the difference when I think of abundance mentality for me. That's been where I've been challenged in that. What about you? Like, if you felt like, you know, fear, or do you see scarcity mentality being a...
Oh, definitely. I mean, I shared briefly when I was first called into vocational ministry that the big hang up, I mean, for about a year was this daily, like, I think I'm called into it, but I am terrified of leaving my job and being a fundraising missionary. I mean, that doesn't mean that struggle is over, but I felt like I really had to face that and decide, am I going to let fear call the shots, or am I going to let faith in Christ and obedience to him win out in my life? And so I think that's really significant. It's interesting, the abundance thing. I think that the first week in this series, you triggered a thought about that too, because you talked about it, but just that God operates so differently than we are able to as humans. Mm-hmm. So at our job, for example, so like if there's a promotion at your workplace, there's one promotion. So if someone else gets it, you don't get it. If there's an award to win, someone gets it and not you. There's usually not like enough to go around in the world. That's just the way everything is here. But then when we come to God, he has an overabundance, an ever overflowing of everything that we need. And so he can give that to Jay and I don't have to feel bad about it. Mm-hmm. He can give it to me too, because he didn't run out. Whether it's praise or whether it's resources or whether it's a life stage or whatever the thing is, God's abundance allows us to, you know, it's related to our giving, but it also makes me think it's related to celebrating what other people have.
Right.
It's you don't have to feel like, well, they have and now I don't, because right. God is, he doesn't run out.
Right. And nothing stokes competitive fires quite like money does.
No.
Like it really, and not only in the Christian world, I've seen this, and not only, envy of other people, what they make, but then also leading to judgment. And so, let's say that I wanted to take a vacation with my family in Florida, but I felt like that wouldn't be, a good use of my resources. And then you go and take a vacation to Florida. Like, that can build resentment and judgment, even if the Holy Spirit was actually telling me no, and that was not something that I was supposed to do, but God was giving you that gift to open the doors to be able to do that. And so even if we're both being obedient to the Holy Spirit, there can be resentment and judgment in that, which just articulates what we know, which is that we think that our hearts want to be drawn to law, and we want to create that law, and we want to believe that it's something that I can control. And so good Christians don't do this. They don't buy this kind of car. They don't go to this kind of vacation. They don't live in this kind of house. And we realize, like, all that stuff is so relative that, and that's not to say that there's not importance in stewardship and wisdom, but it is wisdom given by the Spirit, not by law that we've created.
Yes. Yeah, some arbitrary set of human standards that we just live by. And I think money is one of those where it's really easy to do that, because we're just all swimming in similar water.
Yeah.
So even you mentioned, you know, the place in the world we live and just the relative wealth that we have, we compare each other to each other.
Right.
It's just hard to ever, I remember feeling that when I was starting out brand new in IT. So I was making good money as a 23-year-old, but compared to the guy who was in his mid-40s and working there a while, I made minuscule money. And so it's that comparison is always happening with money. I think even when we don't realize we're doing it, it's just there. It's a part of the way we're wired.
It's so funny. Yeah. When you think about the water that we're in, like, yeah, you're not aware of the water that you're swimming in, because that's just normal. But like, even in that illustration of the vacation to Florida, like if I said, oh, that's too extravagant to take my family down there, so instead we're going to go to the Upper Peninsula and just tour around there. Well, that feels like a big gap. Most of the world would look at that and be like, what's a vacation?
Yeah.
Like, how do you travel, like, for leisure? That, how does that even work? Uh-huh. There's that relativity in that.
I do think that's an obstacle. We didn't talk about that ahead of time, but comparison. mm-hmm. a comparison in either direction. So you can compare and be less generous, and you can compare and be like, it, I think it works both ways in our hearts. And that's why we have to look at Jesus for all of this. We really do. I mean, we walk with each other in it. We're not isolated. We're not just these individuals making choices on our own, but we can't compare to each other. We have to walk with him in it.
Yeah, it's meant to be, we're meant to be able to encourage each other and maybe challenge each other, but it's not, you know, our Father deals with each one of us in very different ways. Like some things are the same, and then other things are unique to how he has wired us, the circumstances he has given us in our lives. And I think that's, you know, one of those obstacles is just that we don't believe. I mean, ultimately it comes down to belief, and that's what the message was really about, is like, do you believe that your Father has an abundance of riches? Do you believe that he is calling you, that he is offering you rewards? Like I mentioned on Sunday, we typically, most of us come from a culture that we don't really like talking about rewards for it. But the fact is that that's what God offers us. He tells us, hey, obey me with your money. And this is how you obey me with your money. You give generously, you give cheerfully, joyfully, give extravagantly. And I will reward you. I will reward you for that. He's not telling us to do it for our own, just for our own benefit, like our own good, or because we're a good person or anything like that. He's saying, like, this is better. He's calling us to invest in something better. Every bit as much as if you have a personal advisor, like a financial advisor, who says, hey, don't put your money in this low interest checking account. Like, you're getting like 0.1% interest on this. Invest it over here, you're going to get a 10% return on it. And if you looked at your financial advisor and said like, well, no, I don't, like if you thought his, whatever his motives are, or if you just didn't, the question would be like, do you believe him? But if you told him like, well, no, I don't want to put my money where it's going to make more money. Well, that would be silly. If you're going to invest, if you're going to believe God, if you're going to, you know, invest in the kingdom, then it means believing that he's going to reward the way that he says he is. He's not asking you to do it in some self-sacrificial way. He's actually saying it's better. So I think that is a huge obstacle, is we just ultimately, we can't wrap our brain around it. Like we just, and that's the thing we talked about last week in the podcast. This is just a way in which God is so different from us. Like there are ways that we are made in God's image. And so things that we can relate to, and then there are things that we cannot relate to. And one of the things we cannot relate to is his abundance, that he is never poor. He is never limited. He is never, like, he has no limits. And so we have to just accept that on faith, because we have no other frame of reference for it. We could pick out the richest person in the world and we would still say, well, yeah, but it's limited. Like we're figuring that out. We're trying to colonize other planets. Like we're going to run, like money, even the wealthiest people in the world are going to run out of money at some point, or they're going to run out of time. They're going to, like, something's going to run out. They're limited, but God is not.
Yeah. And we can't comprehend it because it's part of God. It's part of his attributes, right, that are just beyond us. It's why he's God.
Right.
What about practical things, kind of on the other side of that? So we talked about some obstacles.
Yeah.
But what about, like, if someone's listening and they heard the sermon on Sunday and they're like, all right, I'm convinced. This is really important. What do I do?
Well, you know, I think one of the things that, if you grew up in the church at all, then you've heard the term tithe. So I think that's one thing that we would want to address. I didn't get to address it in the sermon. I've addressed it before. But this question of, like, are we supposed to tithe? And if you're not familiar with it, tithe, it was in the Old Testament, they would be called to give a tenth, 10% of their what they have. And so that 10% was accrued. And so then the Levites, and it took care of the priests, it took care of the temple. And so they would give 10%. And so that is still a guideline in the church. And there's a lot of debate about, is the tithe still in effect? Like that's a question I've had many times from people. Like, well, isn't the tithe in the Old Testament, is that really still in effect? What would you say to that?
I would say no, because something better has come. And so I like the what you said, like as the guideline. I think what Jesus does with, like, if you just read through the Sermon on the Mount, what he does with all of the laws from the Old Testament, when he says, you heard it said, but I say.
Right.
So his but I say for the tithe and for wealth is, it's everything. Like,
right.
Like, it's bigger than that. And that doesn't mean that I'm saying right now, well, we all need to go give 100%. Like he said to the rich young ruler.
Right.
But he certainly would not call his followers to give less. I can't imagine that. Everything else was, well, you've heard it said, you know, adultery. Cannot sleep with a woman who's not your wife. But then he goes, but I say to you, if you look at a woman and lust after her, you've committed adultery in your heart. So he takes those laws and gets at what's deeper. And it's not less demanding, but more demanding in the end. And so I would say that on that principle, that his followers would joyfully give. And I think in the end, and it might not be where we start, but in the end, it would be more. It would go past the tithe.
Yeah, I think the tithe can be a helpful. I think it can be a helpful guide. I think it's, you know, because at some point we certainly can get wrapped up, and I've gone through these phases where I would feel super guilty for even buying coffee at Starbucks, and God doesn't, like, that's not. The aim of this is not, the aim of God's teaching and the teaching of Jesus on money is not that we would feel super guilty about money. Proverbs is full of just incredible things about, like, the value of wealth. Now, Jesus warns then against being rich and how difficult it is for a rich man to enter the kingdom, but that's because of the idolatry of it, because it is so powerful. And so he's basically saying, I think often saying, like, look, it's better off. You're better off to be poor. Like, some people, we get into the poverty gospel where we think it's holier to be poor. It's not holier to be poor. But I would say that spiritually, it is certainly easier. It's similar when Paul says about being married. He's like, look, it's like better for you to remain as me. But if you can't, like, just like, better for you to get married than to get burned up by lust and passion. And so there are these things that it can be awkward and uncomfortable to talk about, but the reality is that there are all these warnings, but then there are also all these wonderful things. If the idea was that we're just not supposed, like, that we're supposed to not have anything to do with money, well, then that would be the warning. But instead, And we would see that in the kingdom, there is no money. Like, if God said, you know, well, hey, in the kingdom, there's no wealth because wealth is evil at its core. Well, that's not what is described in the kingdom. Like, streets of gold. And, like, there's wealth all over the place. There's endless riches in heaven. And so we do not see the kingdom as being like immune to or disparaging of wealth in and of itself, but there are grave warnings that come with it. And so I think the 10% guide is a helpful tool to just kind of give us some handles to go with. But to your point, it's not the law. And so it's not something you check off and say, like, okay, well, I'm tithing, so now I'm good. Because a tithe for one person is not the same thing as a tithe for a different person. Like, for some people, if you're, like, in giving your tithe, that would actually put you below the poverty line. And for other people, giving the tithe leaves them with $18 million a year to live off of.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that's different.
Yes.
Right? Like, so
very different.
I've known some people who have been more fortunate financially. And I know a couple who live off of what they call a reverse tithe. So they live off of 10% of what they, and they give away 90%. And when you ask, you know, well, why do you do that? It's because they don't need more than that. They take so much joy in giving away the 90%. They would never trade that. They're not giving away the money because they're scared of it, or they're doing it because they feel like they've been given all of this and it's their joy to give it away. And so they just feel like that's a better guidepost for them. If they just gave 10%, they'd be like, there'd be no faith in that. There's no like joy in that. So they give 90%.
Well, that's another tip right there. You just said it. The faith part.
Yeah. Well, I don't know if that's a tip as much as it is like the whole thing.
It has to be like when we think like if it's not law. So if we're not just saying, here's the code, check this box and do this thing.
Right.
Then it has to come from a different place. And ultimately for a follower of Jesus, it's faith, right? It's trusting him and walking with him. And I mean, really, when we give to anyone or to anything, we're entering into what he's doing in the world. And we're saying the stuff that I have isn't even my stuff. It's your stuff and I'm managing it. I'm stewarding this in some way. And so I give towards what you're doing. And I think that's a really important place to start, because one person doing 90% giving is very different than another, like you said, Jay. And I'm assuming that these people arrived at it through their walk with Jesus, not because someone else said to them, this is what you must do. And again, that goes back to the comparison thing. Whenever we start to prescribe for other people, well, with your life, this is probably what you should do. That gets so dangerous. But we can encourage each other to say, talk to Jesus. Lean into your walk with him and do what will be obedient and stretching for you. Don't do what's easy.
Right.
Do what would actually require you to live in faith.
Yeah, so I mean, so when we get really practical, so yeah, it is all about faith. But when we get really practical, I would say one, I had two thoughts on that were opposing thoughts. So one is start small. So if you're sitting there thinking, you know what, I want to respond. And like I talked about in the sermon on Sunday, that part of the reason why money is such a big deal is because it is the most tangible, it is the quickest, most tangible way to express faith. There's just nothing like it. You can like commit to having a quiet time. You can commit to serving. You can commit to a lot of different things. But when you, in our culture especially, when you write a check or you give away money, that is an immediate action of faith. That then you're just saying, okay, I'm trusting here. And so I think that one way to do that is to start small. Like if you've never given, say, to the church, and you're thinking, man, 10%, like 10% would put me below the poverty line, or I don't like that would cause massive changes. Now it's one thing, like if you look at that and you say, oh man, that would mean that I need to sell my fifth car. Like, okay, well, maybe consider that and say, I think I can do that. But if you're saying, I don't know how we would eat if I give 10%, then the question would be, okay, well, what is faithful giving? What does it look like to start at like 2% and to say, it's not about giving, like giving what I can, but giving to stretch and say, okay, 2% would still be a stretch. I'm going to do that. And then to keep giving from there. But the other side of that is, I would say my other big piece of advice usually is start big. So it sounds like it's contradicting. Start small and then start big.
It does sound like that.
It does sound like that. But sometimes I think I've seen a lot of people grow from the idea of like, you know what, I'm just gonna write a big check. I'm gonna do something that terrifies me. I'm gonna write a check that scares me. I'm gonna give it. It's kind of like jumping in the deep end of the pool. And when you think about it, that's how Jesus called his disciples to follow him. When he talks about like turning your back on everything, let the dead bury their own. No one who puts their hand to the plow and looks back is fit for the kingdom. Like there's a lot of things where Jesus is saying it's all or nothing, like jump in. And so we all have had the experience of approaching a cold body of water, like a swimming pool where it feels cold, or, you know, a lake or whatever. And you have two options. Like you can kind of dip your toe in little by little and be cold the entire time until you eventually immerse in, or you can just dive in and just immediately like deal with the shock of all of that. I think God calls both. I think he asks for both at different times. And that's where we're talking about discerning the Holy Spirit and saying, letting him determine that. And if you believe that he's calling you to take a radical step and just write a big check, like maybe it looks like here at the end of this year, and this is going to sound totally self-serving, but I don't even care because I it just is what it is. But like maybe you're thinking, man, I didn't give this year. I was afraid. My job situation, a lot of people have cited the pandemic of like being fearful of continuing to give because what if my savings aren't enough? What if I lose my job? What if I can't get enough hours? And so maybe you did that this year and you put giving on the back burner. And so maybe the scary thing right now is to say, you know what? I did get through this year. God was really faithful. And I'm going to write a check for the entire year's like tithe. I'm just going to write it in one big check. Maybe that's what it is. Maybe like I've known people who've like basically tithed in advance, like written a check for next year's tithe and written it at the beginning of the year rather than waiting in response, which is a really beautiful way of doing that. Saying I'm bringing my first. Again, in the Old Testament, when they were giving the 10%, it was their first 10%. It wasn't like the leftovers. It was meant to be their best 10%. And so for us, that could be something where you say, I want to give in advance rather than, you know, as a response always. So those are just a couple of, what would you say to either to any of those or to anything else?
I think those are great. I actually really like the, you're right. It does sound like you're saying two different things, but actually it's the same thing. It's given faith. Start small, start big. And I think that, you know, as pastors, if you're hearing this and it's something that you feel like I need to talk more with someone, I need to process that to figure out, we would be happy to do that. We'd be a joy to process that. But my encouragement would be, do this all prayerfully. Do this in a way that brings you closer to Jesus, because that's why this is so important. Ultimately, God doesn't need our money, right?
Right.
He doesn't. He doesn't need us to give anything. He doesn't.
He just wants us to trust him.
Yes.
Because he wants to bless us. Like even in Malachi, like I was thinking about that Malachi 3, when he is talking about how they're robbing, he's like, you're robbing me. And they say, well, how are we robbing you? He says, by not bringing your full tithe. And you could look at that as like, well, you know, so then, well, man, that looks like if I can rob God, then he must not have enough. But that's not his issue. He says in verse 10 of Malachi chapter 3, bring the full tithe into the storehouse that there may be food in my house, and thereby put me to the test, says the Lord of hosts, if I will not open the windows of heaven for you and pour down for you a blessing until there is no more need. Like,
that's amazing.
Yeah, what he's saying is you're robbing me of the joy of blessing you. Like that's ultimately what's happening. It's not that God is poor and so now he's like, man, well, we don't have enough to eat around here because you didn't give. He's saying like you're robbing me by not having faith. And he says, put me to the test in this. See if I don't open up the windows of heaven. Like just pour it out, pour blessing on you until it's just extravagant. That's what he wants. And that's his joy to do it. So when he calls us to give, he doesn't need us to give. Our hearts need to give. And so that's where we're saying, like, put him to the test. Like, it's the only time that God says, put me to the test. Because he's asking that we trust him with the thing that we value. And so when I say start small or start big, like, some of that is just knowing yourself. Knowing where your spiritual, like, being aware of some spiritual blind spots or from your wiring, because maybe like there are people listening to this for whom the starting small and committing to 2% and then 4% and then 6% is far scarier than just writing a big check. Because some of us like are more wired to be scared of that kind of ongoing commitment. Like if you're more impulsive, then you be more the person who'll be like, all right, I'll write a big check. Sure. I'll do that. And then I'm done. Right. Yeah. Like I did my part. And that one big act will carry me through years of disobedience because I'm like, well,
just keep looking back to it.
Yeah, right? Keep looking back. Like, hey, this one time I wrote a big check.
Yeah.
And so if you're that person, if you're more impulsive and tend to fear more commitment, it may take more faith for you to commit to a certain percentage and continue to grow. But others who like to control those things more, you might be able to figure out a way that your budget still works and that you can manage your giving at 2% and maybe at 3%, maybe at 4% because of your planning, not because of your faith. But writing a big check would terrify you. Writing a check in advance would terrify you. Like that's what I would go at. I would say, like, ask yourself the question, like, how can I give in a way where I need to trust Jesus? Where this is actually faith. And then let him come through in that. Like, let him show off and bless in the midst of that, and then see what that does to your faith. Like, it's just a really incredible opportunity that we have.
Yeah, man, that's interesting to think of. Man, that's again why that comparison is so important to not do that. Because for some people, that example of writing that big check kind of gets us off the hook. Right. And that I was thinking when you were saying the incremental too, the 2 and 4 and 6, 8, 10, 12, 14, mm-hmm. 16. Like, I really do think that that's what God has for us, not in those numbers, but that mentality, that it's just a growing in understanding and experiencing his riches will make us continue to grow as generous people, where we don't cap it. I'll say, well, I've reached my 10%.
Right.
It's just continuing and growing in it. And that's a beautiful thing, because I'm confident that when we're at that place, we are going to be experiencing what Jesus promised, right? That our treasure will truly be in him, that where our heart is set really will be on him.
I'm really glad that you pointed that out, because if somebody's sitting here listening going like, well, I tithe, I've been tithing for 20 years. Well, maybe you should be giving 12% or 14%. And the stretching is like, you know, the parable of the talents, and if we're faithful in small things, he will give us greater things. And so continued faithfulness is not paying our dues. It is continuing to stretch these muscles of faith and to become more and more faithful. And so I think that's really convicting and really helpful, that because otherwise I think any of us that have been giving for a long time to the church can absolutely, it can just be like, well, that's just normal, which in one sense is good. But in another sense, it becomes like there's no faith in it any more than somebody who doesn't give. And so, yeah, that's a good word, Jeff. I'm glad I had you on this podcast.
Hey, thanks, Jay.
And I'm glad that everybody else could join us on our 100th episode. I don't know if this was worthy of being 100th episode, but it was, you know, hopefully it was helpful.
Yeah, we brought what we had.
We did. We brought what we had. We're like the poor widow. Like, we just had two small copper coins. That's all of our wisdom, and we just offered it. So hopefully, and that's more than what Robbie offers when he, out of the abundance of his wisdom, he shares just a little bit.
Robbie, I don't agree with that.
Okay.
So one last comment for me.
I love that you think he's listening to this, but go ahead.
I was just thinking that I think this topic, I mean, whenever we're talking about discipleship and obedience thing, we're lumping ourselves in with it. Like, we're talking to ourselves right now.
Right.
And I just wanted to underscore that. Like, especially in even with money as pastors, this is something we are working on with Jesus. This is all stuff that I'm like, when I'm speaking, I just wanted that to be clear. I'm speaking to myself.
Sure.
Too. Like, first and foremost.
Right. And I'm also speaking to you.
Yeah.
we're speaking to the same person. You know, that there are a lot of times people don't realize that. So two misunderstandings about the church that I hear a lot, that I'm surprised at how much I hear. So if you're listening to this and you think either of these things, you're not alone. But one is, people don't realize that the way the church has money is because the members give. Like, I think a lot of times, especially if you come from a denomination that's more hierarchical, like the Catholic Church is, you know, where they have like there's not in our type of church, there's no hierarchical structure. Like there's no parent organization that's funding what we're doing. It all comes from the people in this church. So that's one misunderstanding. A lot of times people don't know that there's no big organization that's funding what we're doing here. But the other thing is that they're surprised to know that people who are on staff here, pastors and ministry leaders, also give. Like, you know, which can seem counterintuitive. Like we receive, like we're paid out of people's tithes and offerings, which is why we don't take that for granted. Like we live off of the generosity of other people. They have supported us and said, we want to free up your time to be able to do the equipping of the saints for ministry. And so we take that very seriously. But then we also, we give from that back to the church. And so, yeah, we're not asking people to do anything that we aren't doing ourselves. So, you know, full disclosure here, Jeff, you did give me the wrap up sign earlier and then you kept talking.
I know.
I'm sorry what to about do with that. Yeah, that's so weird. Robbie points out that I like to call out the nonverbal cues that are like we give to each other. So I do that. Like Jeff gave me the wrap up sign and he's like, so another thing. And I'm like, well, wait a second. Are we wrapping it up?
I felt like that was an important thing.
It was an important. I'm really glad you did do that though. I think everybody can agree that was good. So, all right. Well, hopefully this has been helpful and that you have enjoyed our 100th episode. If you have any questions or things that we can help you with about this topic or anything else, please let us know. You can always email us at connect@faithpeshtigo.com. And so, yeah, until next time, grace and peace.